When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Top marriage years, by the way, are 32 for men and 30 for women as of 2022.
Oh, another hill that we're over.
Well, I guess we're not getting married then.
Gonna die alone with my dog.
No, we'll die with each other.
Welcome to Millennial, the home of pretend adulting and real talk. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
And hey, if you're new to the show, smash that follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode every Wednesday. And you can visit millennialshow.com for more about the program that we put on here. We are proudly an independent podcast. That message was for any new listeners who might be discovering us on Spotify or elsewhere. For our existing listeners who are like, what the fuck? Why did he just say that? That's so random. You know, somebody who won't be smashing that follow or subscribe button is O.J. Simpson.
I wanted him as a listener.
We've been trying to get him on the pod for a while now. He actually lived in Vegas in his later years. Now that I live in Vegas, I follow like the local Vegas Twitter accounts. And of course, they were mentioning where he would frequent. I now know like his favorite bar in Vegas, his favorite cocktail at this bar in Vegas. And honestly, like, I kind of want to go there now just to say I went where OJ went.
I was going to ask if you did do that because I know you texted us about some people pouring one out for good old OJ over the weekend.
Yeah, that's been a fucked up angle of this too, hasn't it? Like seeing people pay tribute to OJ. It's like, pretty sure he did it, y'all. But O.J. Simpson's an interesting figure for us as millennials, because when that whole case was happening, when the trial was happening, we were all pretty darn young. I remember vividly still my parents following it, tuning into the news, the trial every day. To me, I just didn't really care for it. I didn't know what was going on. And I didn't really look into the details of this case until The People versus O.J. Simpson aired on FX, and this was an adaptation of Jeffrey Toobin's book. It was produced by Ryan Murphy. It was an excellent series. It taught me so much. So to anybody who was young during that case and didn't follow it and might be interested, especially now that he's passed, check out that show. Did you two follow it when you were younger?
I mean, my parents definitely did. I do remember the Bronco chase. Like, I remember seeing that live. But I didn't really understand it. Outside of that, I was more familiar, I think, with like all the late night talk show jokes that you would hear everywhere. But in terms of the ins and outs and the nitty gritty details of the case, I didn't really understand now.
I just feel like that's something that our parents probably would have shielded us from, because we're old enough to remember when event news was happening, right?
Yeah.
And probably remember our parents tuning in. Laura and I have talked about the day Diana died and how our moms were glued to the TV, for example, or a little bit more of a recent touchstone for us probably would be 9/11. And I feel like the Bronco chase was kind of one of those things that we probably remember seeing in the background. But that being said, it makes sense that we don't really have a lot of intel or memories of the specific details, because we wouldn't have been watching the trial, or we would have been sheltered from it, because a lot of it is really gruesome. Like, that's one of the things that I took away from watching the TV show that they made about what happened, was like, I hardly knew anything about this, but man, like, it's probably a good thing, because this is not stuff for children.
Yeah.
It's really gruesome.
My dad in particular really babied us when we were growing up. So I think he was definitely hiding it from us and definitely didn't want to share it with us.
Along with Rose's boobies.
Yeah, 100%.
I will say it's wild though, because like our generation probably only has recollections of OJ being a killer, right? But for our parents, he was a big deal. I don't know if your all's parents were into sports, but mine were. They were big into watching football and also baseball. And so they still remember his illustrious career as a pro sports person. And even like my best friend's dad also remembers like watching him with college ball because his like career spanned through that. And I guess he had like an acting career. And these are all things that like I didn't know. And probably most millennials our age or younger don't remember because all we remember was that he went to trial for maybe killing his wife and then also the Bronco chase.
Elizabeth said something interesting. She's listening live right now on our Patreon. We got to watch the criminal trial wrap up and jury decision at school. And that was in seventh grade while the eighth graders had standardized testing. So I won't say rest in peace, but I will say I don't know what to say. I'm going to go try his favorite cocktail.
Good luck down there.
Good luck down there, the OJ. Yeah. Hope hell is comfortable.
Hope Nicole's not waiting for you. Well, something else that we just wanted to briefly acknowledge here at the top of the show, because I feel like it would be weird if we didn't acknowledge it. You probably saw that Iran launched an attack of rockets and drones against Israel on Saturday night. This was in retaliation to the Israeli government's airstrike on a building near an Iranian embassy in Syria, which killed an Iranian general. Thankfully, Israel's Iron Dome did a really good job of deflecting the incoming attacks. But I'll be honest, my butthole was puckered all weekend, y'all, because I thought we were looking at the opening pages of World War III. Yeah. I don't know if anyone else felt this way, but I definitely spiraled this weekend because I was like,
nervous.
Fuck.
Yeah, no,
it's like, oh, great. Here's, you know, the continuing litany of like unprecedented events that millennials get to live through. Like, Jesus, never ends. But I will say I was actually really happy that President Biden told Israel's President Benjamin Netanyahu that the U.S. wouldn't support a counterstrike on Iran. Ultimately, because I'm sure Biden told him this, but it really worried me that we would and that it would then spill over into a larger regional conflict that would demand the interventions of multiple world powers. And there you go, you have a world war. So I was pleased to see that. You know, I think no matter what you think about relations between Israel and Gaza, I really just want to underscore the importance of this happening during an election year for us in the United States. I'll just say this, one of two people is going to be sitting at the helm of this global shit show and probably others that are going to unfold as time goes on. And if imagining how that situation might play out isn't enough to light a fire under our asses, I really don't know what will be.
Well
said. It's incredibly dangerous to imagine someone like Donald Trump sitting behind this. And to be clear, Biden ain't my top pick, but these are the choices we have.
The better of two options. One of them has been falling asleep in court this week, 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I did.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how puckered is your butthole tonight?
Oh, man.
10 being the most pucked.
Well, I would say, honestly, ever since 2016, I've been at like a constant 5.
Low grade puckering. Yeah.
Low grade. Like kind of, if you think about like the terror alert system, it's like green, yellow, orange, red.
Yeah.
Like, you know how the U.S. has been perpetually in the orange for like ever?
Yes.
I feel like for me, it's the equivalent of being in the yellow forever. And then there are these periods of time like Saturday night where it's like, danger, Will Robinson. We are like all the way up in the red zone and I am terrified.
Yeah. I'm glad you specifically called out 2016 because I have observed, and I may have shared before in the show, I feel like Pokemon Go, which released in 2016, was the last good thing to happen on Earth. It's been downhill from there. That's when Trump won the White House, and it's just never gotten better since.
Man, see, when we're old, when we are all like granny and granddad age, even if we don't have biological grandchildren ourselves, I'm sure there will be children in our lives, and we will wax poetic about the good old days of playing Pokemon Go.
Throw a Pokeball at Pikachu and Snorlax, and we used to walk to go and catch a Charmander. It was so innocent. Well, on today's episode, wanted to focus on this interesting piece that we saw in the New York Times titled "How 33-Year-Olds, the Peak Millennials, Are Shaping the U.S. Economy." And this looks at how millennials born in 1990 and 1991 are the peak ages in the U.S. population. These people are turning 33 and 34 in 2024. Now, I am currently 34. I'm turning 35 this year, so I'm just outside of this range. In fact, we're all over this hill now, right? So what's the impact of what the writer of this piece calls peak millennials, those who are turning 33 and 34 this year? Their sheer numbers are essentially controlling the economy because they are also at key turning points in their lives. For example, getting married, buying homes, having kids, or not having kids. And they influence the job market. So the impact of those born in 90 and 91 is massive. I'm going to quote the article now. When peak millennials went to college in 2009, the enrollment spike was so significant that community colleges that had once prided themselves on welcoming all students started to turn applicants away. When that group began to graduate and moved for jobs, the population of metro areas like New York City, San Antonio, and San Francisco jumped to new highs, leading to a fierce contest for a limited supply of apartments in some places, the Bay Area in particular. That re-urbanization boom came when those millennials were coming of age, getting their first jobs, looking for housing, and looking for roommates. Now the people who would turn 33 and 34 this year are at another crucial juncture in their financial lives. They're leaving cities, starting families, and buying houses. And while some of those changes have been sped up by the pandemic, the demographics alone help to explain why today's economy is performing in often surprising ways. So I want to start by focusing on city living. Where are we in terms of city versus suburban or maybe rural living? Just to set the bar here, like Laura, you live in Atlanta, but you're kind of like on the edge of town.
Yeah, no, I'm not like in Midtown or downtown. So what I'm doing right now is kind of my ideal scenario. I want to be in a city, but I want to be in a city that has certain regions of it that feel like neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So for instance, when I walk outside, I don't necessarily feel like I'm in a city, but like it's 5 minutes down the road from me.
Right.
So if I want easy access, I have it.
Right, right. You can conveniently get to what you need. Maybe you can walk a place or two, but you don't have like the constant traffic of living in, say, a downtown area.
Right.
And then I'm actually basically where you're at on this. If you were to look at my house on a map, you would probably be like, is he even in Vegas? Because it would look like I'm on the very edge of town. But I like it that way. And I can still get to, let's say, the Strip or other really nice areas of Vegas within a 20-minute, 25-minute drive. And I prefer it that way so I can have my crazy Vegas night if I want it. But I drive 20 minutes back home and I'm in basically the suburbs again. It's like I don't even live in Vegas. And yet I'm also still close to the essentials, your grocery store, your Lowe's. And then Pam, I guess I would classify you as in the suburbs. Would that be right?
Yeah, I'm in the suburbs. I don't mind it. I've always kind of lived in the suburbs, but for a while I was living in a city. I think I'm a city girl at heart, though, but I think it would be different if I lived, if I was like a city girl in a city that was more concrete. San Francisco is still very green. It kind of gives off the illusion of being more suburban than it actually is. But I don't mind the fast-paced lifestyle of a city. There are some pros and cons for sure. But I like public transportation. If I could take public transportation every day, I would.
Yeah,
I would sell my car and do that. Because then you don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about traffic. You can just like relax and read a book. So like all of that is, it ticks a lot of boxes for me. But I also recognize that it would be way different if I was, say, thinking about starting a family, because then you do want maybe suburban life, right?
Yeah.
The other issue too with living in the Bay Area is that if you want to get to a lot of these other parts of the Bay, you have to cross bridges or into other cities. And the toll for bridges is getting absolutely insane. So it's not fun.
Yeah.
To be like excluded from that or feel like you're being excluded unless you want to, like, I think it's like almost $10 to cross the Golden Gate Bridge now.
Ooh, is that both ways or just one direction?
Just one way, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was growing up, it was three.
Yeah, that's, I do wish we had better public transportation options here. That would be really nice. Being in Chicago for a couple of years, they had it there. LA has it, but I regret to say I never actually used it. And I feel like I should have, because
honestly, I tried so hard.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass, but I hear it's getting better. I hear they're remodeling it. They're trying to do more with it for the Olympics coming up in LA. And I think that's really going to help. But there was this one time that I was trying to use public transit just to get from LAX to the Staples Center, and it was going to take 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's ridiculous. At that point, I'll just rent a car and sit in traffic.
Yeah.
Speaking of public transportation here, a little aside, a lot of people might have heard of this by now. A high-speed rail line is finally truly being built between Vegas and LA. And it's a big deal because this has been talked about for a long time. And we don't really have high-speed rail in this country. So this company, Brightline, is finally building this line between these two cities. But the founder of Brightline said a couple months ago that it could cost as much as $400 for a round-trip ticket for one person. What? I know, it's insane. I mean, you can drive between the two for way less. And plus, you will have the benefit of having your own car in LA or Vegas. LA especially, you need a car there. So I might do this once just to experience it, because I think it'd be pretty cool. I hope it's not $400 when I do it. I'll try to get a cheaper ticket somehow. Maybe it'll depend on the day of the week. But this is not something that's reasonable for the average person. $400 round trip when you can drive and carpool with people? Forget it.
Yeah, I think we've talked before about how, or I've definitely told you both privately that I would love to do a cross-country train ride, like the Writer's Train or something like that. But trains are so expensive in America. It almost doesn't make sense to take them.
Yeah.
Like it would be a splurge. And that sounds so silly because it's not like you're guaranteed a place to sleep on a train unless you pay more money.
Right.
So yeah. You would think it would be cheaper.
I agree with you. I've looked at those like lines that go up and down the West Coast. Like it'd be awesome to do one of those. But yeah, so pricey.
It's wild. When I was in undergrad, I used to take the train up to school in Maryland, and that was like an overnight train from Atlanta to DC to Baltimore. And it was, the reason I did it was because it was cheaper than flying. And it made sense, right? Like, yeah, it's kind of a drag to be sitting in an overnight train with not a ton to see on that particular route, but it's cheaper.
Yeah.
But when it got to the point where the tickets for trains rivaled the prices of airline tickets, it was like, well, why wouldn't I just buy the plane ticket at this point?
To that point, even, and I know it's because the states are smaller and more close together on the East Coast, even the Megabus is so cheap. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of times that I took the Megabus for under $20.
Same.
To Boston, to DC, to Philly.
Having a high-speed rail line in this country, going cross-country would be absolutely amazing. I would probably do that instead of flying if I was heading back to the East Coast.
The oil lobby will never let it happen.
Well, if this Vegas to LA one actually does work out, that will be a big moment for America, because finally we'll have a significant high-speed rail line.
I hope it does, because they've been talking about high-speed rail from San Francisco to LA forever.
Yep.
And it's never happened. Gavin was lobbying for that when he was still mayor of San Francisco.
I think he's still lobbying, isn't he?
Still not working out for him or us. So
one day, one day.
Yeah.
Well, things are actually looking up for peak millennials, getting back to this article. Quoting it again, in recent years, millennials do seem to be finding their economic and financial footing. After high initial unemployment, today's early 30 adults now work at very high levels, with about 8.1 in 10 holding jobs. Wealth holdings for people under the age of 35 have recently begun to pick up notably, helped along by rising home values and higher stock prices. So I just wanted to check in on you two. How are you doing? Are you good?
Like, in general or financially?
In general, financially. This is an abstract question.
Okay.
Smoke a doobie and then answer it.
Oh, okay. Well, you should have told me. I got the supplies. I could have come prepared.
Bring your doobie to the pod.
Yeah, I feel good. It is crazy to think about, because my benchmark for this is always to think about 10 years in the past. So when I think about myself at 25, absolutely broke.
Yeah.
I had no assets.
Yeah.
I didn't yet own. As a matter of fact, I was still in grad school, incurring a shit ton of student debt, after which I had to move home for a while, kind of get on my feet. And then I was able to take steps to start building up my position in the world. But like, my life is totally different now than it was this time 10 years ago, in a very positive way. So I would say, yeah, I feel good.
How about you, Pam?
Well, I think it could always be better, right?
Yeah,
but I think,
of course.
To Laura's point, when you think about like even 5 or 10 years ago, I think that the squeeze was different. Right now, everybody feels squeezed because of inflation and the economy, right?
Of course.
But I definitely don't feel as squeezed financially as I did even like 5 years ago, I would say. Like, and I gauge that based on like, if I go to the store and I see like a cute dress, then I won't, and it's like $30, I'll be like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to like spend crazy, but every once in a while, if I do, it's like, I'm not going to feel like, oh, I shouldn't have spent those $30, or like, that was like too much. Now I'm going to have to choose between like this cute dress and feeding myself.
I'm with both of you and all of the points that were just raised. I do feel like I'm living financially comfortably at this moment. And that's not to say I just spend wildly. But when I do want something, when I do want a dress, or I do want to go out for a good meal, I'm going to treat myself to it. But that also comes as a result of me not overspending and generally being smart with my money. Laura, you mentioned investing. I did not get serious about investing until 2017, 2018. And I regret that. I wish I started investing before then. And even if it was just little amounts on a monthly basis, but I was doing no recurring investing. And that was especially a big problem for me because I've never worked for an employer and had a 401k match. Now, what am I, like 8 years into investing? I feel more comfortable because I have built up this piggy bank that I haven't had to tap into as an emergency fund, but I could if I needed to. And just doing the calculations about what this investment account that I have will turn into in the future is a very comforting thought as well. And I invest on a monthly basis. So I take comfort in the fact that I can still spend how I would like while also investing, and neither impacts the other.
Yeah, it's nice when you can comfortably do that, right? Like, I just have automatic direct deposits, or transfers, I should say, going from my checking to my savings.
Exactly.
Every
That's
month.
Smart.
And it's really nice to be able to do that and not feel like I have to dip into that, or feel like I then don't have enough money to, like, you know, I call it like the social fund, for like my social fund. Ooh. Or say like for the fun spending and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I feel you.
Yeah. I look at the stock market every day. I don't know if you two do that.
No.
It's bad. I really shouldn't, because it's like there's these down days. Like the past week's been pretty bad. And I'm like, oh, boy. But then I just have to remind myself, like, don't worry. It's the long term. It's the long term.
Honestly, I just don't look because I'm too dumb to understand it.
So. Red means bad. Green means good. Yeah. Open up the Apple stock app. If you see a lot of red, that's bad. If you see green, that's good. That's all you need
also,
to know.
Also, Pam, look at all the stock bros that are out there.
They might as well be speaking a different language, Laura.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they can get it, you can get it.
I need somebody to explain the stock market to me like you would explain Taylor Swift to Laura. I know a few people personally, by the way, that listen to our show now. And I just know I'm going to get so many texts about this. Because, like, I'm going to teach you about the stock market. It's like, please don't. I feel like that's going to ruin our relationship.
I feel like a big part of understanding the stock market is first understanding your risk tolerance.
Yeah.
I work with an advisor who helps me with some investing, and he had me take a quiz to literally map out, like, what is my level of risk tolerance? Some people are comfortable being more aggressive. Some people are more conservative. I'm a little more in the middle ground, erring towards the conservative side of things. Mark recently told me that I'm like a boomer when it comes to finances. So I guess that explains a yeah. few things. But I think understanding, like, your own comfort level with yeah. investing is like a good first step.
I do get that because it's like, I look at, like, what happened even, like, most recently with GameStop,
mm-hmm.
for example, and how many of those people just went crazy buying, and then lost all of it. You know, you never want to be in that situation. You just want to be comfortable investing as much as you could stand to lose, potentially.
Right, yeah. Exactly. To help you understand finance lingo and good investment strategies, I love this account on Instagram, at Personal Finance Club. He introduces concepts in an easy to understand way. He uses a lot of emojis too. So, you know, he's kind of trying to capture the Taylor Swift crowd. So definitely check him out.
Got it. I'm going to save and follow.
I am going to go ask ChatGPT for some Taylor Swift stock market analogies to help Pam out. And we will be right back. Let's look at home buying now. Again, quoting the article, millennials snapped up houses in 2020 and in 2021 as the Federal Reserve cut interest rates to near zero. That was partly about the pandemic. People wanted space amid lockdowns, but it also reflected that a big group of people were finally far enough along in their economic lives to buy property. Just the demographic story is a big one to explain why home ownership went down in the 2010s, bottomed out in 2016, and now we're seeing this boom in suburban demand that the housing market is grappling with. And the wave of millennials now trying to buy could contribute to a topsy-turvy housing market for years to come. The median age for first-time home buying is typically in the mid-30s, according to the National Association of Realtors. Peak millennials are only now approaching that age range. But hot demographic demand is colliding with very limited housing supply following years of underbuilding after the 2009 recession. That has helped to push prices to record levels where they are hovering, even as the Fed tries to slow the economy with higher borrowing costs and steep prices. These are combining with elevated mortgage rates to make the market painfully unaffordable, including for the starter homes many peak millennials would love to buy. So I bought in 2020. Laura, when did you buy?
2017.
Okay. What's your interest rate? Do you mind sharing that?
4%.
Okay. Mine's like 2.7% because I bought peak pandemic.
You got that good interest rate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it makes people so jealous. But I feel awful for people who try to buy right now or even in the last couple of years because those interest rates are absolutely killer. The home prices, absolutely killer. With the current state of the housing market, the higher interest rates, the high costs, anybody here see themselves moving or buying a new home anytime soon?
I want to, because honestly, like, this is where we are is an apartment style condo, and it's like 800 square feet. I bought it in 2017. Mark and I had only been dating for 3 months at that point. So I very much bought this place for me.
Right.
I wasn't thinking about, oh, you know, maybe I'll have a partner that I want to move in later. I was really just thinking about me needing a place to live and not wanting to, you know, get fucked up the ass with rent. Mm-hmm. Because if you think rents were crazy then, I mean, just look at them now, you know?
Yeah.
So I just wasn't about that. I wanted to build my own equity. And now that we're both here, it really feels like we are outgrowing this place as much as I love it. So we want to move into something larger and we want to potentially look at moving to another city. But with the housing market the way it is right now, we're not exactly chomping at the bit to do it because, well, and I'll, this is my boomer financial side coming out. I am not chomping at the bit to do it because I know what's going to happen as soon as I walk away from this 4.5% or 4.5% interest. I'm going to end up with like 6 or 7%.
Yeah.
And that's the difference of hundreds and hundreds of dollars per month on your mortgage. So I don't want that.
On freaking interest too.
Yeah. Blech.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for me to ever move and go to a higher interest rate. So, like, I have zero plans to move anytime soon. And I can't wait to see how the value of this house evolves over time. We're also very happy living here. And making a bunch of friends in the last year has helped solidify this place as a home. We'll be here as a place we'll live for a really long time. I don't call Vegas a forever home, but I was ready to leave Chicago within like 2 years of living there. Now I'm approaching 4 years in Vegas and I don't even dream of moving. So I figure that's a good sign. I got at least another 4 to 5 years or whenever the city runs out of water.
Do you know what you think your forever home will be?
I'm thinking Palm Springs.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I kind of figured that was going to be the answer.
We had to check in and make sure that you didn't change your mind on us.
Another nice benefit of living in Nevada is there's no state income tax. So it'll be hard going back to a place that does have income tax. But we'll just have to see where we are at that point financially and with our careers and all that.
Well, and just remembering that... they may not collect state income tax in Nevada, but they're getting you in other ways.
Yes. Vehicle registration fees are very high here, for example.
Yeah. When you told me how much yours was, I about died.
Yeah.
Because mine's $50.
Oh, my God. Oh,
I forgot about that.
If you get a new car here, you'll be paying around $900 to $1,000 per year for vehicle registration. And it goes down as the value of your car declines.
That's so much money.
I know somebody here who has a camper van, and first of all, I'm jealous, like dream. He pays like $3,400 for vehicle registration fees annually.
No.
That's wild too, because it's not like things are so close by in Vegas that you could just like walk if you can't afford to register your car, for example.
Yeah. I will need a pool if I move to Palm Springs. That will be my one requirement. How about you two? What are your forever homes?
It's hard to say. The next place that we really do see ourselves living is the DC area. And when I say that, I mean, it could be DC, it could be Maryland, it could be Virginia, like the parts of it that are the outskirts of DC.
Very expensive to live there too. Well, DC at least.
Yeah, we know. It's a thing. And this
is why they're working up to it.
Yeah. Well, and this is another thing that, again, makes me a boomer with finances. So Mark will like show me a place on Redfin. And where my eyes immediately go is the price. And I'll be like, well, immediately, no, that's not in our budget. And he'll just be like, okay, I know that. I'm just trying to show you something that I like about this house. I'm not saying that we buy it.
Let him dream, Laura.
I just like this thing. I know. And that's the thing. I realize that I'm too much of a stickler.
Oh, no. I'm
ruining his dreams.
Pam, where's your forever home?
I don't know. It's so hard to leave California. I do really like California, but I was born and raised here. You know, I'm like third generation, basically. That's way different than, you know, somebody like you, Andrew, who fell in love here, but it's not like you have like no ties here, like your family's not here, you know, you weren't born there. So it's different. But if I were to move out of California, I really do like the Pacific Northwest. Mm. And I like that the weather is similar. I'm a big fog girl, so I could definitely get down.
I'm a big fog girl. I've never heard anybody.
Fog.
What?
I didn't mean to say fall. I meant to say fog. I don't know if I said that.
Oh, no, I heard fog.
Okay.
You said fog.
I love the fog. Yeah.
I've never heard the phrase, I'm a big fog girl before.
Well, I don't think I've heard it either. I'm just saying that, like, I freaking love the fog. I love
it's overcast.
It is. Laura knows. I hate, like, I don't need the extra vitamin D. It's fine. I get seasonal depression in the summertime because it's too hot.
Oh, my gosh. Meanwhile, I'm like, roast me alive. I love the heat. It's 80 today. I'm living for it.
I know, you're a little desert lizard.
Burn me to a crisp. It is important to keep in mind, though, buying a home isn't necessarily the American dream that we've been led to believe. When you're growing up, you're told, like, you know, that's the goal. That's the end game. But as illustrated by Personal Finance Club on Instagram, owning a home has plenty of downsides that renting does not. For example, realtor fees, maintenance fees, utilities, property tax, mortgage interest, home insurance. These all add up. These are things you don't have with renting. You probably would have utilities, but not everything else that I just listed. And
there's also weird stuff that you don't even think about, like, technically, you're responsible for the sidewalk right in front of your house, too. So if you're repaving, you should also fix the sidewalk. You know,
might have HOA fees.
Because somebody could sue you.
Yeah.
If you don't. Yeah. There's all that weird stuff.
When there's also all the home maintenance, too, right? Like, if you're in an apartment and your HVAC goes bad, that's not really your problem. It's your landlord's problem. But if you are the property owner, prepare to spend many thousands of dollars replacing the damn thing if it truly went toes up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the stuff I didn't think about before I bought my place.
Yeah.
It's a pain.
So I feel like I have a leg up here because this was a new construction home. So any major maintenance that will occur, I won't have to worry about for a while. It does stress me out a little bit, but in the meantime, I'm saving. And when that day comes where I do need to replace the HVAC, I will have some money saved up and I can do that without sweating it too much. I do still think, despite the extra costs involved with owning, I'd prefer owning over renting. I'm just willing to take the risk that my home's value will increase enough across the life of ownership that it will have been a good investment. And because I did buy in COVID, in peak COVID in July 2020, the home price was low, as was the interest rate. So now the home price is looking a lot better. And I'm happy about that.
It's a good time to refinance too. Like, if any of you are stuck with these really high interest rates, just keep an eye out. And when it looks like it's a good time to refinance your home loan, do it. Don't even think about it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the trade-off that I'm starting to become aware of with sort of the stabilization of the housing market, we think about the fact that this will stabilize eventually, that interest rates will drop. But from what I'm seeing and hearing from people who know a lot more about this than I do, it's like a seesaw, because as soon as the interest rates drop, home values are going to skyrocket. So some people have adopted the strategy of saying, suck it up and buy now while home values are more tenable, and deal with the shitty interest rate for a few years. And then when they start dropping, refinance. Some people seem to think that that's a better approach than just waiting out the market to stabilize on the interest rate side of things, because they believe that at that point, the cost of housing are going to skyrocket.
Yeah. Well, good luck to anybody who's searching right now or wants to. I don't envy you just because of where the prices are right now and where the interest rates were even a few years ago. But hopefully things will get better.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the wedding industry. This is maybe a lighter subject. Quoting this article again, another age-old institution could struggle as peak millennials age: wedding venues. The millennial generation's sheer numbers have managed to prop up demand in the wedding industry, even at a time when marriage rates overall have been steadily falling, said Shane McMurray at The Wedding Report. But a post-lockdown wedding boom from 2022 is already fading and will likely recede further as my age mates move past top marriage years. Top marriage years, by the way, are 32 for men and 30 for women as of 2022.
Oh, another hill that we're over.
Well, I guess we're not getting married then.
Gonna die alone with my dog.
No, we'll die with each other.
Okay, we joke, but Laura, you plan to eventually get married, right?
Yeah, but like, yeah. You know, like the thing is, we don't want kids. And I feel like for a lot of people, that's the real pressure in terms of timing, because I don't have that particular pressure on me. It's not as big of a concern.
Yeah, I don't plan to get married anytime soon. I'm not feeling it currently because it doesn't really, I don't see what it adds to my life. And believe it or not, I don't want the attention of a wedding. If anything, we're just going to elope and people are going to find out about it after the fact.
You're not going to invite us?
No.
To be your witnesses?
I don't even want to be at the wedding.
Oh, my God.
I'm inviting y'all.
Well, okay, thank you. And I appreciate that. I want everybody to wake up one morning and just see it on Facebook. Like, Andrew and Pat are married. Oh, okay, that happened.
I mean, listen, it's your wedding.
Well, and then it's that money. So I've also heard this thought that instead of having a wedding, you can, you know, just elope or whatever. And then you use that money that you would have spent on a wedding to go travel the country or travel the world. And somebody suggested to me, you could just go travel the country and see all your friends who would have been at the wedding. But because you didn't have one.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah,
that's
you just cute. Bring the wedding party to all these cities around the country.
Yeah, we're bringing the wedding to you.
Yes. Hey, I know you guys are mad that we didn't invite you, but we're actually coming to you. That's a reasonable trade-off, I think. And then they're like, oh, thank God, I don't have to travel for a wedding. All right, so that's the wedding industry. It's pretty interesting that there was this boom post-COVID and then it kind of fell off.
It's getting expensive to like rent out these venues and stuff like that, just from what I hear, way more than, because I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show, but my grandma used to be a wedding planner, party planner, and she would do party planning for a lot of different things. But, you know, you used to be able to like rent an entire, say, like rec room for $500, and now that's unheard of. So I know that some people are diverting to having smaller affairs, or if they have a fairly decent backyard, they'll do backyard weddings because it's just getting pricey. So that's kind of like the trade-off that comes with the wedding industry boom in general, is that everything's more expensive.
Yeah. Maybe that's what I'll do.
I feel like most of the weddings that I've been to in recent history have been outdoors.
Yeah.
To your point, Pam. Also because there are a lot of more affordable venues that have like economy packages if you're willing to get married outside. It's surprising to me, but I think there's more of a preference to get married inside for people. But I've been to several outdoor weddings. I will say there's one I'm going to next month that kind of surprised me because it's super swanky where it is. And it's also black tie.
Ooh.
And I was like, who in our age group is having a black tie wedding?
Are they rich?
It means you have to buy a proper gown.
I am not doing that. You know what? And this is someone, by the way, who I've been friends with like since I was 12. So she knows me. But it was funny because when I talked to her, she was like, just I want it on the record that I wanted just a regular courthouse wedding. I wanted to keep it small, no frills, but my bridezilla of a fiance really wanted this. And I was like, okay, understood. But good for him for breaking those gender stereotypes. You know, bravo there. Yeah. But I was really surprised when I got the invite. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
This is like swanky.
I like the idea of a backyard wedding. Like, I have a backyard. I could fit like 20, 30 people comfortably, maybe.
That'd be cute.
And then I don't have a pool, but our neighbors do. So we can all just kind of hop the wall and jump over into the pool for the after party. They love gays too. So they'd be all for this, I think.
Well, oh, there perfect. You go. That's perfect.
The only problem is they're Republican, but we can just work through that before.
Gay Republicans?
They're not gay Republicans. They're Republicans who love gays.
Ah, okay. So they recognize that y'all are more fun.
But don't want us to have rights.
Right. But then when it comes time to step into the voting booth,
well, they can say some of my best friends are gay.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. They want to roll things back like it's 1864.
Oh, man. Oh, I see what you did there.
Nicole. Now, they're cool. I actually don't think they would want that. But Nicole, who's listening live, said, my dad offered us money to elope, partially a joke, but he may have followed through. But I wanted the wedding. And Jenna said, I got married at a local park for $200, partly because COVID, but partly because money. And Project Faye said, I got married in my front yard with a reception in my backyard.
I love that.
That's cute.
Marriage in the front, party in the back.
It's like time to move to the reception. If you please come through the living room.
Yeah. Take off your shoes while you walk inside the house, please. Don't bring in any dirt.
Yeah. And Riley also said, I would elope, but then have parties for individual groups of people. I think that that's a good middle ground, Andrew. You and Pat can still elope, but maybe instead of traveling around the country to see people, you just have one big party that you invite everyone to your gay pool party.
Gay pool party. Don't describe it like that. Gays will think there's going to be an orgy happening if they hear gay pool party.
Oh, okay. See, this is, I'm clearly uncultured in this area, so thank you for correcting me.
I promise you that is what homosexuals will think. I
definitely did not think you were going to take
it
there.
No, I'm not. Oh, my God. If I said that to people.
It's like, I thought that only happened in bathhouses. Like, it's not like Andrew Pat's gay bathhouse wedding.
Also, I will just call out that Riley says that they'd want the legal security that comes with getting married. I've seen what death does to people when it's time for bequeathments. It's fucking wild, they said. So that is a fair point.
Fair enough.
But I do like this gay pool party idea. So let me go and put some plans together for that, and we will be right back. All right. So we've touched on this a couple of times, having children. Millennials aren't having as many kids, and we need to actually change that if we want to be supported later in life. I'll quote this article one more time today. Debt delinquencies for auto loans and credit cards are picking up sharply for people aged 30 to 39 as student loan repayments restart after a pandemic hiatus and put the generation under financial pressure. And today's 30-somethings are having historically fewer kids. While that last one can be chalked up to a wide array of societal factors, people cite financial concerns as one of the top reasons they are not procreating. That decline in childbearing itself could create big economic changes and challenges ahead, specifically around 2055, when people my age will be nearing retirement. If today's 32-year-olds become a huge wave of retirees when they hit their mid-60s, they will be drawing money out of a retirement system that is poised to have far fewer active taxpayers to support it, assuming today's demographic trends do not change. Peak millennials will also be filling up nursing homes with fewer young nurses to staff them, eating at restaurants with fewer servers and cooks to choose from, and in general, taxing an economy with far fewer younger people to support them. So a pretty grim look at the future if current numbers hold up. It's something I really do not think about much. I don't want kids. Laura doesn't want kids. Pam, do you want a little Pam or Paul?
Oh,
little
God.
Pam or Paul?
I don't know. I mean, like, at this point, I don't know. It's kind of weird because I don't think I ever assumed that I wouldn't have kids. But now it's like I'm in my 30s. maybe not. I feel like I could go either way. It would really depend on the right person. And that's on my daddy issues, because I'm not having, you know, babies with somebody that's not going to stick around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's understandable. This writer also wonders if millennials will simply have kids later in life than previous generations have.
I could see that.
And they point out that millennials have delayed other things in life. So why not kids, too?
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like right now I'm seeing a boom of people in my personal life having babies between the ages of 35 and 40. So I think we'll see some of this. I also know that, you know, the conventional wisdom about having kids is that, you know, particularly for women, your biological clock is ticking. And, you know, I hate it when people say this, but there's that, you know, old adage about like your eggs going stale and things like that. I think it's just important to remember that we have modern medicine now, and women are able to carry healthy babies to term at much older ages than they used to be. So just because you're 35 or even 40 doesn't mean that having kids is completely out of the picture for you. There are lots of really great doctors that you can work with if that is something that you want. But yeah, I feel like I know like four people right now who are pregnant and they're between the ages of 35 and 40. I have another friend who's getting ready to turn 40 who is actively planning to get pregnant. So, you know, I think that it is fair to say that millennials as a generation may have kids later, but the population issue is not just a United States issue. It's a global issue. People in general are not having as many kids as they used to. And yeah, that'll become a global economic problem as time goes on.
And to that point, you're starting to see certain countries, and I can't think of any specifically off the top of my head, so I don't want to like start dropping names and then be completely wrong, but I have heard of countries that are basically giving moving incentives for people to transplant over there because they don't have enough young people to fill the job markets anymore. And that's probably a direct result of the fact that people stopped having kids. Or I think it was China that was trying to impose like a 2-child per household rule. And now they're saying, just kidding, like you guys could have more kids, because they're also worried about the same thing happening as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the governments of these, you know, major industrialized nations should ask themselves, I wonder why our populations aren't reproducing at the rates that we would expect.
Yeah. And what can we do to make our country a better place to have children and give you a better outlook on the future?
How about gun control?
Yeah.
Stuff
you know,
like that.
I know a parent of a 2 or 3-year-old who worries about that a lot.
Understandably.
Yeah. Yeah. Sending your kid off to school. I mean, even now, you like, I've gone to my nephew's elementary school a couple times to see them at the school, and they got the schools locked down pretty hardcore these days. Like, you have to press a buzzer out.
They're like little mini prisons.
I know, it's sad. You got to press the buzzer out front, say, what's your name? What are you here for? Then they let you in. Pretty sure when we were in middle school, even high school, none of that was happening. It was an open door policy.
They're actually renovating the middle school in my hometown. I was just reading about that in the local news, and it's an open campus too, completely outside and inside. And they were saying that they were going to completely renovate it. And one of the things they were going to put in was security camera footage, but they stressed that they were only going to keep the footage for 90 days and they were going to respect kids' privacy, probably because, you know, when you get to middle school, you start making out or kissing and stuff like that. They wanted the kids to feel like less weirded out by it and stuff. But it's I grew up in a really safe city. So the fact that parents that have moved there now are still concerned is fascinating to me.
Well, to the point about it being scary to bring kids into the world right now, I saw this just today. If you were born in the U.S. this year, climate change could wind up costing you around $500,000 over the course of your lifetime. That's according to a new study commissioned by Consumer Reports and conducted by consulting firm ICF. The study counts up higher bills for climate-related calamities that drive up housing, food, and healthcare costs, for example. On top of that, there's the prospect of higher taxes and lost income over the years in a warming world. And of course, while there's a lot of uncertainty built into the study, it's an attempt to break down all the big and little ways that climate change can affect daily life. Each stifling heat wave, flooded road, and downed power line costs consumers something. It all adds up over a lifetime. So,
yeah. And I mean, you're seeing the effects of that right now. Look at how many insurance companies have completely pulled out of the state of Florida.
Yeah. Yep. Or the premiums are just going up and up and up.
Yep.
Because of flooding in, like you just mentioned, Florida, but New Jersey, where I grew up, they got a lot of flooding that happens. The rising sea levels. I mean, New Jersey's got a massive, great coastline. And insurance rates are going up there, too, because of more frequent flooding. Well, that's our look, our deep dive at this article from the New York Times. We can have a link to it in the show notes if you want to check it out yourself. We hope everybody's doing well and trying to make things work. I know we painted a pretty rosy picture, I would say, of our current affairs in this world. But we know, you know, we've had our downs, too. We've all struggled as well. And that's life, right? It's up and down.
Indeed it is.
Pam, what is coming up on our Patreon this week?
We have AMA part 2 for all of you. So we asked for you to submit some questions, asked you guys to let us know what you want to know about. And so we fielded some of your responses over there. Also, I think I saw that Laura posted a post in the Sound Off channel asking for more questions. So if you guys have more questions for us that you want us to answer, you can go and hit that up. It's right under the Millennial Livestream channel. But yeah, this looks like a really good crop of questions. We're getting a little bit more personal than we did last week when we asked you to ask us specifically about like behind the scenes work stuff. So there's a little bit more of that. And then there's some questions about what we do for a living and the kinds of things we like to cook. So it should be a fun little AMA.
Yeah, it will be. After Dark is part of Mega Millennial, which you get every week when you're a patron or Apple Podcast subscriber. Plus, it is ad-free. You can visit patreon.com/millennial to pledge today. Spotify users will find a banner at the top of our show page, or Apple Podcast users can tap into the show and subscribe.
Don't forget our other Patreon benefits, including live stream access, our monthly Zoom hangout where you can shoot the shit with us and listeners for an hour each month, posts where we gather your feedback for reading on air, and much, much more. Apple Podcasts and Patreon also offer 7-day free trials and annual subscription discounts if you're curious about dipping your toe in before you dive into the deep end with us.
Dip in with us, then join the party in the backyard. And one last way to financially support us is by going to mugglemillennial.etsy.com. If you need help getting your ish together, we are selling adulting planners. They're excellent ways to stay organized throughout the week. And the planners are not set to any specific year. This is how I stay organized during the week. I don't know about you two, but writing down my plans helps me get my plans out of my head where they're stressing me out onto paper. And then I don't have to worry about them until the next day. All right, time for recommendations. What have you been watching, Laura?
I've been watching Fallout on Amazon Prime. Have y'all watched this?
No.
No, but it's I keep seeing
good.
It.
I've heard really good reviews.
It's very, very good. And I'm not even that far into it, but just what I've seen so far has been super captivating. And I feel like we'll sit down to watch an episode and I'll be like, okay, just one, and then I have to go to bed. And then I'm like, shit, we gotta watch another one. I can't leave on this cliffhanger. So it's that good. Check it out.
It's based on the video game, right?
Yep.
I was just gonna say, video game adaptations are continuing to have a moment, it sounds like. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to recommend investing in a walking pad if you're looking to do some more exercising and you don't like the idea of leaving the house. Or maybe like you do like the idea, but you just want to get some more steps in if you're like binge watching Fallout, for example. I love my walking pad. I got it last year for my birthday and it's just really nifty.
What a birthday gift for a millennial. Sorry.
Well, I bought it for myself, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a birthday present for myself. And yeah, I just really enjoy it. I like setting it up in the living room and I'll, you know, if I'm tired of sitting while I'm watching TV, I'll just get on there and do some walking. And it's also great too if it's raining outside and you're trying to get some steps in, or, you know, probably like you could do a little jog on there. Mine goes pretty fast. It goes up to like, I think 4 miles per hour. So you can get a good little jog in there as well. But yeah, if you're looking for something to up your exercise game at home, would recommend looking into that.
Have you tried it while working at like a standing desk?
I haven't, but here's the thing. I think that like I have motion sickness in the car too. And I don't think I would be able to like read while I'm walking. Pretty fast. That's my issue too.
I'd be curious
like,
to
even try. If I'm walking around, I walk fast.
Yeah. So this is a standing desk I have here. I'd be curious to try a walking pad at a standing desk because I hate just standing still at a desk. My back starts to hurt a little bit. So I'm wondering.
It would be a good option. My kitchen island is about like it's basically the perfect height for a standing desk. So that I call that my standing desk. And I think I would have to like raise the computer up, but I'll let you know if it works for me. My thing would be that I just think that I would have to get used to walking at a slower pace so that I could, you know, pay attention to what's going on.
It's tax season in America. Woo-hoo!
Yay.
Hopefully all of our listeners have filed their tax returns. But I just wanted to call out, if you were lucky enough to get a refund this year, you can actually check the status of your tax refund online. We'll have a link in the show notes to where you can go, but if you just Google IRS, where's my refunds, you can check the status of your refunds. I like having this. I am getting a refund this year. Woohoo! I like to see if it has left the IRS or not. They have an app too, where you can check the status as well.
Well, make sure you're following the show in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review in Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. If you leave us a review on Apple, we'll read it on air, especially if it's funny.
To stay in touch with us, you can email millennialshow@gmail.com or visit millennialshow.com. And while you're there, you can also find all of our social media links. Spotify users can also leave feedback directly within the episode.
After Dark starts in a moment for patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.